At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue.
Welcome to At the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Scilia, better known as Tony Mangia. And today, I am excited because I have one of my best friends in the entire world joining me all the way from the West Coast.
That's right.
California, Pete Ferrero. Peter, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, man. This is exciting to be here with you on this show. You know, I've been I don't know what the word is, but I've been trying to get on this show for some time now. It's a very hard slot to get for anybody that is trying to become a guest on this show. Yeah,
but Peter is a filmmaker. He is a podcaster, and what we're going to talk about how this whole podcasting thing kind of really blew up because. We kind of started doing podcasting about the same time, you know, with this whole COVID pandemic and stuff. But we'll get into all of that tonight because the show that he created, or he was one of the creators of, is Beverly Hills 90210 Show podcast. And the show is like it's one of the biggest things on social media.
Yeah, I mean it's been a very wild ride with all of that. It's you know, we were in the top 10, number 5 actually. On the Today Show list of things that came out of the pandemic or virtual events from 2020, listed in the same company as the Office podcast and whatnot. Wow. So it has really taken off a life.
So let's talk a little bit about what the show is that you're the podcast that you're doing, because, you know, not many people, I mean, I guess maybe not, I don't know if not many people know about it, but I mean, it was one of the most successful shows of the 1990s, Beverly Hills 90210. I'm going to be a full disclosure. I have no, I probably only watched it when my wife watched it. She was a huge fan. So I don't really, other than knowing like Dylan and is it Brenda and,
yeah,
and
Brandon and yeah, Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I don't really know these characters, but you were a fan growing up, obviously, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I watched it in high school. It came out the same year that I was, you know, in high school. So, we were going right at the same time together. And
So what was Beverly Hills 90210? Kind of give us a little bit of background as to,
That's really tough to do. It's basically a teen drama television show that and a soap in a lot of ways, you know, that had a lot of various triangles and whatnot. In the very early years, it was a lot of like singular messages of issues and whatnot, and that continued through the 10 seasons. And you know, obviously, everybody outside of yourself knows the entire cast and show really well, and it's hard to do like a Wikipedia here, but
I'm just like a basic rundown. When did the show premiere? What year are we talking?
1990, October 4th, 1990. Actually,
so it's amazing. What, 30 years? 30 right. years on that the show still has this fan base. It still has this draw. Why do you think that is?
I think because we all graduated with them, you mm-hmm. know, in the various stages of our lives. And if you were a little bit younger, you either had a brother or a cousin or a friend who graduated with them. So you got into it and you started to fall in love with the characters. And then they almost became like relatives to you. Mm-hmm. You grew up with them. You saw their triumphs and their tough times. And I think we're closely connected to those people. It's like any kind of long-term show, right? You know, I mean, you watch them grow and you watch what happens to them and whatnot, and you just kind of, you know, you fall in love with it. But because I think particularly that these were kids shows when we were growing up, I think that it speaks to something different. And right now, nostalgia is so in. And it's our group, it's my generation that is making nostalgia in, you know, mm-hmm. and so talking and reliving this about this together with other fans is just awesome, I think.
So then what made you say, okay, you know what, we're in the middle of a pandemic, I love 90210, Beverly Hills 90210, one of the greatest shows to me ever. let's make a podcast. What was your thought process to bring this to the masses?
It's interesting because I can remember watching 90210 a lot on Instagram. Well, not on Instagram, but I was watching it and then I would post Instagram stories, mm-hmm. You know, like about something that I had saw and whatnot. And then after an episode in the last rewatch I did, probably about 2018, I was like, damn, I was like, God, I want to know why they did this, or I wonder if this happened or that happened. So it already had kind of been, I don't know, like circulating in my brain, you know what I mean, to do a podcast and to do a podcast about like the things that I really loved. And it was originally the Papa podcast, if you remember.
Yes. That's where I was.
Sorry, I got my window open. I'm like one of those annoying guests. but yeah, so I was like, you know, I had started that podcast, and I had Charles Rosen on my podcast, who's one of the original executive producers and writers. And I was like, you know, I think we had done that, and that went really well. And I was looking for another opportunity to have him back, but there really wasn't an opportunity. And it was really hard to find guests initially when I was doing that pop-up podcast, because I hadn't done much podcasting. I was really new to the world. And then, like you said, you know, COVID hit, and then me and you started going live every night, and sometimes together, you know what I mean? Sometimes opposing. We were like Letterman and Leno for, for a hot minute there. And yeah, so I was like, you know, and it was interesting when I was doing that. I had Vic DiPetetto on. I had the guy from the Stones on. We had done one with Charles, and I asked him to bring a friend, and it was Larry Mullen, who I just absolutely love, and love both of them. And so we did one, and it was just a general question. It was a nightmare in a way because I was using Zoom to broadcast this, if you remember. And Zoom had a technical glitch, but we all got through it, and it wound up being a really highly interactive conversation with fans and whatnot. And I really became friendly with this girl, Lily, who ran one of the larger 90210 fan groups. I mean, I can't understate enough like how important it was meeting her and in the initial stages of, you know, getting her in the mix and all that, and like getting me the attention to the 90210 audience and whatnot. And we had a really great night. And I was like, listen, I said to them afterwards, I was like, I think we should make this a podcast. We all have nowhere to go this for the next foreseeable future. And Charles was like, no, he did not want to do it. And Larry was into it. And I don't know why he didn't want to do it. I think he was hesitant to do it because he had a book that he wanted to write about it with a lot of the same conversations. But in a way, I think he's found that the book has been like, this podcast is going to even help the book in a way, because he's got an opportunity to rewatch these episodes and whatnot. So he said he agreed to do 10 of them. And now tomorrow night, Wednesday night, 8:00 Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we will be doing our 50th episode. So we've come a long way from the 10.
Yeah. Wow, really?
Yes.
We actually have a comment here on YouTube. Charles and Larry are the best. Love the 90210 show podcast.
That's right.
From Connor.
But Connor's great.
But so you know, but really, Peter, it's amazing how – so, I mean, so did you just like email these guys and say, listen, you know, I'm thinking – you know, I have a podcast. You know, I want to do a show about 90210.
I had emailed Charles first for the Papa podcast.
This is pre actual show.
And then once the pandemic hit and we did that event that I said with Lily, I was like, this has got to become a podcast. And I'm, you know, and when I know something's a thing, I kind of try to my hardest to fight for it, because I knew that there would be a big audience for this. And I knew that there would be a lot of interest in it. And I knew that there's a lot of conversations. You know, I had watched a lot of wrestling podcasts or listen to them. Mm-hmm. And I loved listening to the inside stories of how, you know, Vince McMahon created this story or that story all those years ago from the people on the inside. And so I was like, 90210 has got 10 really great seasons. The first 8 or first 7 way better than the last 3. But, you know, I feel like there was enough people that would be just as interested as I am in this scenario. And then, you know, it just kind of, we started doing them, and it took some time to like get a flow, like most of these podcasts. You know, you got to get comfortable and find yourself, and who are you as a host and all that kind of stuff, and who are they as guests, and can we get guests, and who's going to be on the show. And it just kind of developed over time, You know, I mean, we did an episode, I think episode 10, maybe. I don't remember all of them, but with Brian Austin Green. And that,
Jersey, he's a Jersey boy, right?
No. Brian Austin Green is not a Jersey boy.
Which was the Jersey
boy? Alan Ziering is a Jersey boy. That's right. Yeah.
you see, I have no idea. I'm learning things here.
I mean, you knew, at least you knew one of them was a Jersey boy.
Because the one way, because he went to William Patterson University.
I think he did. Yes.
That's, that's where I went.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. But yeah, so then Brian did the show and it was great. And, you know, people started talking about it. And then once we got through episode 10, that things just started happening.
So obviously you've had cast members on the show.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, virtually everybody except for Shannon Darty and Tiffany Thiessen, but pretty much, you know, all of the mainstay has stopped by multiple times or once. Uh-huh. And a lot of the guest stars.
I'm going to have to ask you, because there's something that I see you post a lot about on social media. Okay. I don't really know, I guess, the backstory. Huh. But you post about this person or this woman on the show named Claire?
Claire Arnold, yeah.
So I had to ask you, what is it all about? You got to explain this to me.
Okay. It's great because, you know, like, I grew up a big fan of 90210, and then when Kathleen Robertson or Claire came into the show, I became absolutely just obsessed with this character. I loved this character. We had so much in common. Like, she was on the TV station. You know what I mean? She was really into video. I just liked her personality. I think she's super pretty. I mean, she's just really funny. It's all of it. And, you know, I'd always kind of known that I liked this person, and she was like a TV crush or whatever you would call that, you know, back in the day. I've told lots of people about that through the years. You know what I mean? That like when people would ask me, now I was thinking about it before we came on, that's never really ever came up with us because we've never had a conversation like, who was the person on TV that you really liked the most? You know, there'd be no reason for us to have that conversation. No,
because we always talked about food.
And that's it. Yeah. That's pretty much food and snow, which we'll talk about. Which we're going to probably talk about today.
Yes, anyway, exactly.
So I had been just like, really, once we started this podcast, I was like, ooh, I was like, there is this offshoot opportunity here where I might get this opportunity to talk to Kathleen Robertson, Claire. And I was like, I don't know. I kept like checking her social media. She doesn't really talk about 90210 too much. And so we started this petition to get her on the show. And
really?
She totally did not respond to the petition at all. She wanted nothing to do with this podcast. No, deny. And I don't know. And I was like, this is my girl. This is the one person that I really like followed's career. You know, I don't have many of those. And I was like, I got to have her on the show. I just have to talk to her. I have to talk to this person. And then finally, we made a video, like a plea video. And this Zara, who's a big fan of our show, and my godson, Ryan, out here in LA, he recorded a small little video. And a few weeks later, she finally hit me up and was like, okay, I'm going to do your podcast because of your my nephew. Because of
really?
My, yeah. And then we did do that. She did the podcast and it was great. And we talked a bunch before that. And now we talk a bunch. We actually talk personally. And she's become a friend. Yeah, I would say that she's become a friend.
Wow. See, so really, you know,
I mean, I haven't hung out with her. You know what I mean?
No,
I
well, also
we haven't had dinner. You know, we haven't gone to the Belmont Tavern together.
Well, it being COVID, it's kind of hard to really hang out the way that we would pre-pandemic.
We DM, you know, we chat here. Or I'll throw her a comment every once in a while about something that she was in, and we have a laugh about it and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, it's been absolutely crazy. Every time she messages me, my heart flutters, and it just, I get all those old little, you know, TV crush feelings back too. So
it gives you all the feels, right? As they say,
it does. It gives me all the feels, and she's such a talented actor and producer and writer. So who knows? Maybe one day we'll explore. Do something together.
Again, I'm Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. Joining me tonight is my good friend, filmmaker, podcaster, Pete Ferrero. We're talking a little bit about his podcast. That's only what? So you figure it started around March, April?
I think it started in April. Okay. And
it's the not Beverly Hills 90210 show. You can see on the bottom of the screen, www.beverlyhills90210show.com.
That's right.
And that is that will take you to the to be able to watch
the goes right to the YouTube. We don't have a website. We don't have an email finder. We don't have any.
It takes you right to the source.
That's it. You want to watch the show? Here's where you go. That's it. It's that simple. Yeah.
So, Peter, obviously, we're going to talk about a lot of things and we'll be jumping back and forth, I'm sure. But it's an interesting story how me and Peter and I met. It was, geez whiz, it had to be about, 12, 13 years ago now. I had just gotten a job working at Bobby's Burger Palace. It was a burger store. I don't even know if it's even open anymore, to be honest. I don't even know if they're even open, Bobby's Burger.
Of course he is, right? I mean, why wouldn't Bobby's Burger Palace not be open? I mean, I never heard of that.
I don't know, because I drove by. It looked like it was closed. Like, there was no lights on.
Well, I mean, maybe because of COVID is what you're saying?
I guess. I don't know. So, long story short, me and Peter and I met at Bobby. I was working there. He would come in and get a burger every once in a while. And
a lot. Bam, get a burger a lot.
Oh, yeah. I was.
I mean, I lived in Paramus. That's where the Burger Pal, Paramus, New Jersey. Shout out for all those people. And I would go in there probably 2-3 times a week. That's the truth.
And I would always look forward to Pete coming in because we would just talk about, food, not so much the Italian stuff then, but it was more about the food and about, the burgers and Bobby. The
restaurant scene, Bobby, what was going on in New York, because you were just starting to explore more restaurants and whatnot. Yeah.
And I remember I was doing a kind of like a pop-up thing with my college, with the Bergen Community College.
That's right.
And you came to that luncheon.
I did. That's right. That was a Bergen. I remember that.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Three or four courses from what I remember.
Oh yeah. I think it had to be about three or four courses that was my menu. We had something called the Bergen Room, and it was like a sit down, like an upscale restaurant. We kind of turned this one little cafeteria into it, and all the students would cook. And each week a student would have the opportunity to be the manager, the owner, and it was a really great experience. But that's, so that's kind of how our foray into the food world began. And then there was other things we part of the Men Who Dine.
That's right.
And that's for a whole other podcast, because we could go on and on about that all night. But we had a mutual love for food.
And more particularly New York City and the restaurant scene in New York City at the time, I would say, right? Yeah.
And really, I mean, it's unfortunate how much I would say the last few years, the city was on an upswing of like all these great new restaurants opening, and then boom, COVID happened.
What was the first, what was the first restaurant that we went to together outside of your thing? I remember we did your thing.
Oh, I know exactly what it was. Because it was when we went to the Ethiopian restaurant in Montclair, New Jersey.
Was that the first one?
And then we went to Anthony Bourdain's book signing at Bookends.
Well, all right. Or what about the time we went to Alpiz and there was like a news thing?
That might have been afterward. That wasn't first, I don't think. I think we saw Bourdain first.
I love the Ethiopian restaurant in Montclair.
Yeah, what was it? I don't even know. You know what? To be honest, I don't even know if it's even there anymore.
Meepop or something.
Mesab or Meesab. but really, so I know that you were kind of working. So talking a little bit about the pandemic and about COVID, I know that you were working on some food-related documentaries with an S at the end. So yeah. one is more focusing on, the name of it is Her Name is Chef.
That's right.
It focuses more on, I guess, a woman's role in the kitchen, a woman's role as a chef, as an owner, as an operator. And then you're also working on another project, that's also about COVID, right? Or about
COVID restaurants. Yeah, that's called Sorry We're Closed.
So let's talk a little bit about, because really Her Name is Chef was I guess that was really your first
food documentary. Yeah. The Price of Fame is my first documentary.
We could talk about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's whatever. That's an old topic, but I do love that movie, and it is out and it is available everywhere. Interesting developments there that I won't talk about. Then I was like, I really wanted to get into another documentary. I really wanted to make another documentary, but I wanted to make a documentary series. And I actually, this is the truth of how this movie came to be. And I've never told this story, but it is true. There's two versions that that really happened, but this is the truth. I was watching Beat Bobby Flay one night, and I saw Caroline Schiff on Beat Bobby Flay, and I said, I need to meet this person. That's how this movie started, because she was so funny, she was so interesting, her food looked delicious, and I was like, I really, really like this person. That was my first, but I didn't say I want to make a documentary about Caroline Schiff. You know what I mean? I was just like, I just want to meet this person.
Yeah.
And then I started to think about just this conversation about what was going on, you know, about at the time, in that time when I was thinking about this project, you know, there was a lot of stories coming out about how tough it was for females in the restaurant world. And I was thinking about that. I was like, I really think that there's a project to be made about female chefs and what their perspective is. And I really didn't have much guidance on it other than I thought it was an interesting idea. About a week later, I was sitting at a restaurant in New Jersey, in East Rutherford, or in Rutherford, I think it is actually. And the woman that was working behind there's Caroline. The woman that was working behind the counter at that restaurant was dealing. They had just opened a new format to the restaurant that was there. And she was really having a lot of trouble with the staff listening to her. And she was on the phone, and it was just like a lot of stuff that was happening about, you know, and I had a sense from sitting there, and maybe this is because the world of women chefs and all this was starting to like develop around me. I had gotten a sense that this was because she was a woman that she was having these difficult conversations, where if a male chef, and I had been around a lot of male chefs with the Men Who Dine and You, mm-hmm. and I had seen the approach, and I had seen how people just, you know, jump and react. And so I was like, this is really a thing. And so then I went to her, the counter to pay, and she had a little thing that said girl boss, you know, a sign there. And I was like, oh, this is it. Girl chefs. This is girl chefs is going to be my next documentary that I make. And, and then I started to develop girl chefs. And somebody told me that's really a bad name. and I was like, okay, well, it needs to be her name is Chef, you know, and that came pretty quickly. And okay. I started to develop those, and then we have a mutual friend, Alex, who's really wonderful, and we both started talking about this project, and I approached her about helping me kind of develop it and find the chefs, and she was critical in that part of it.
Well, I remember we were actually, again, there's just some moments that you're always ingrained in your brain, and I remember we were sitting at the bar at the Crow's Nest.
I miss sitting at a bar.
Period.
But, yeah, I mean, like, I literally miss sitting at the bar. Yeah.
Well, because the bar is a place where you meet people, having conversations,
out, talking to you, eating a little something. Like before we came on here, I was like thinking to myself, like if this was a different scenario, I would have went to the bar. I would have had a little drink, a little something to eat earlier, and prep myself for this appearance. But now yes, it's not. Yeah. Nope.
So yeah, I remember we were sitting at the bar at the Crow's Nest, and you were kind of saying that you were thinking about doing this documentary about women, and we were talking, we were talking about, you know, who would be the ideal, I guess, host or hostess of the show. So that's how you. I think that I know we were throwing around some names, and one name that came up was,
well, there was multiple people. I really wanted Elizabeth Faulkner to host it at first. Mm-hmm. But it was really hard to get a hold of her at first, and that's not the same thing about Elizabeth. She just didn't know me. We didn't know each other. It was just I didn't know her, so I couldn't find the right in to get to talk to her at the time. Now we talk all the time, so it's weird. You suggested Leah Gaccione, who is that? Who you were? And I was like, Leah Gaccione, because I had also seen her on Beat Bobby Flay. I feel like we were all in that season, you know. And I was like, okay, maybe. I was like, I did eat at her restaurant once and I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. So, and I was like, okay, maybe. And then maybe a couple days later, a photographer friend of mine had said the same thing, that it should be Leah Gashion. And I was like, okay, I will try to arrange Leah Gashion, at least a conversation as maybe one of the chefs. And then I called her, or I Facebook messaged her, and she didn't reply to me. She thought I was weird. And then I emailed her, and she finally emailed me back. And then she agreed to meet with me, and we talked. And I was like, God, this is the person that should host this. It was actually a series at the time, too, by the way. I said that. And then inevitably it became a film, and we could talk about that later. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So now, success. I remember you kind of shot it episodic, right? You had like, you kind of had one chef per episode.
That was the plan.
How has it evolved?
Okay, a couple of things. The first thing that happened was we did all six, the six chefs that inevitably made it into the film or into
the series. Who are?
Yeah, Elizabeth Faulkner eventually did come on board, and she's been wonderful and was great. And Caroline Schiff, I did get to meet her, and she is just as awesome as I thought she would be, if not more awesome. Juliette Masters and Esther Choi is in the movie, and Hillary Sterling's in the movie. And we got Hillary Sterling because we were supposed to meet Elizabeth Faulkner one night at Hillary Sterling's restaurant. And Elizabeth, for whatever reason, the scheduling got screwed up and missed the meeting. I loved Hillary's food so much that I was like, wait, why isn't this person in the movie? You know, or in the series. And so then Hillary, and she's just phenomenal. And then, of course, the one that I wanted the most was Fatima Ali, because I thought she had just come off Top Chef, and I thought she was just that makes me a little teary-eyed when I see that. Yeah, but I just thought she would be so good in it, and she had such a good story, and I thought that people would really relate to her. And I had known at the time that she had just beaten cancer, so I thought it would be a really great, hopeful story at the time. And so Leah actually was the one who connected with Fatima, and then we met her. And I remember my meetings with all of the chefs and getting them on board, and how that all happened, and chefs that I really wanted that didn't come on board for reasons, but who are now in other movies with me. But yeah, it was an interesting process. It was a series. We were focusing on each one of the chefs because they all had uniquely interesting stories and perspectives of this. And I thought, to really capture what it's like to be a female chef, you need to talk to every or all of. And then, you know, we did six because it was in New York and I was in Jersey at the time. So mm-hmm. it was very easy and convenient to shoot them. And I was like, well, maybe season two will be LA and season three would be San Francisco and Colorado and all of that stuff. But we really struggled. It's interesting because we really struggled to sell it as a series. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's just so many networks like to have their hands in a series. Mm-hmm. And when the pandemic hit, I was thinking to my, because, you know, and then unfortunately, sadly, Fatima did pass away during the making of this movie. And that really amped up, you know, the process for me of wanting to get it out because I wanted everybody to know her story. But, you know, timing is really interesting in life because if I had released it as a series back in that time period when she had passed, or 6 months after when all of it was, we were trying to sell it and all that, it actually would have been the wrong time because some of the material I wound up getting in the last, after I decided to make it a film, has been such a difference maker in what the project was versus what it is today.
So are you still shooting it or no? It's in the can.
It's all done.
But you film stuff.
No.
After.
So I was like, okay, I'm gonna make it a film. I had this moment. I was sitting in a bathtub, and I was like, this is true. And I was like, you know, because I was thinking about all these pivots, right? In 2020, mm-hmm. It was very early in 2020, and I was like, you know, the pivot of doing a podcast. I'm not shooting weddings. I'm not shooting events anymore. I'm gonna be doing this podcast for the year, and I don't know when I'm gonna shoot another event. You know, I don't know when I'm gonna shoot another commercial. I don't know when I'm gonna make another documentary. This is my project, and I need to find a way. So I had Virgil Films is representing the film, and I called them and I said, listen, I was like, what do you think about me making this instead of a series, what if I turn this into a film? It just hit me. And I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't know. I've had a lot of moments in the last couple of years where it almost is like Fatima speaks to me. It's a very odd thing because, you know, I didn't really know her all that well or that long, but I've heard this repeatedly, and you'll hear it in the movie, like people really didn't know her very long, but they felt like they knew her forever and all of this kind of stuff. And so that moment in the tub was like, I think this should be a film. I think I can turn this into a film. So I talked to Joe from Virgil, and he's like, don't do anything crazy. Don't hire another, like an editor. But if you have nothing to do in this pandemic and you want to give it a shot, we can always use a couple of things that we can try to sell. And so I was like, okay, I have, outside of this podcast, which is a job and I love, and it's my dream to be mm-hmm. host a podcast. I love what I'm doing and I love doing it. But outside of this, I was like, I don't have any events. I don't have any regular work going on. I was like, so let me refocus this. And so I basically took the best moments or the strongest moments from each series, each person's series. And then I just kind of like, it was like a big blank canvas. I don't even know how to explain it. And I was weaving it in and out of each other, and it was not working. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the way, I was like, this is Fatima Ali's story. This film, while it's, yes, about all of these chefs, but the heart and soul of this film is Fatima Ali's story. And that's inevitably what people are going to want to hear about. And what I am the most connected to as a filmmaker is this one. So I started to weave it in and out, started to feel pretty good. I start to talk about the other six chefs. We start to talk about a lot of the issues. I'm talking about the film, a lot of the issues that they were dealing with. There's so much commonality between all of them. Mm-hmm. And then I started talking to Fatima's brother about this process and really needing more material of hers, whether it be old videos, and we start having some dialogue about that. And he sent me some really powerful footage of Fatima at various stages of her life. The stuff that's particularly at the end of her life is very interesting. And it just like that, if I didn't, having that footage now, it, like I could never have released what I wanted to release earlier because it wasn't the right timing, and I needed some of the material that I still didn't have yet. So it really, like, it's just like all these movies and all these things that you make, they all take a life of their own, and you don't really, sometimes you're in control of it as much as you possibly can be. But then there's that unknowing thing, you know what I mean, that just kind of happens, and we know what that is, so.
Yeah, yes, we do. Again, I'm Anthony Chilia, better known as Tony Mangia. Joining me tonight is my good friend, Pete Ferrero. He's a filmmaker. He's a podcaster. And we're talking a little bit about his new project that will be released soon entitled Her Name is Chef. So, Pete, do you have a release date?
So, as of right now, the plan is that we will do a virtual cinema release on March 19th. And okay. We'll get all the links and all that stuff and share all that when I have them. I don't have them yet. And then we will follow that with a iTunes, Amazon release as well. So you'll be able to buy it and watch it via those two places. Yeah.
So now I know you do have a couple of websites. So I guess your production website would be sunspotfilms.com, correct?
Right. That's correct. Yes.
And again, Peter is with the Beverly Hills 90210 show. You can check them out at beverlyhills90210show.com. But Peter, so
I still can't believe I got that domain, by the way.
Which one?
Beverlyhills90210show.com. I don't understand how that happened, but okay.
That's a moment, you know.
It
was meant to be. Mm-hmm. So Peter, Her Name is Chef. So is it still with Leah as the host of it?
She's definitely our narrator now. Yeah, okay. And she's our guide through meeting all the chefs. I mean, she was such an important part of the movie. You know what I mean? Like having that person to go through and talk to them and share experiences and share what she had heard from somebody else. So yeah, she is the driving force of the whole film.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's a food based documentary as well. So there is food involved.
There's
so
a lot of food.
I'm going to have to ask you the question.
Okay.
It might be a tough question.
God.
What was your favorite meal that you ate during this filming of Her Name?
It's not even up for a question. It's the cacio pepe at Vic's. It's not even, and I love all the food I ate in the every time I went and shot this thing. But the cacio pepe at Vic's is absolutely
why.
It's just there's an authenticity. There's this finesse to it. It's homey, right? I'm Italian. You're Italian, so it sings on that level. Plus, you know, Hillary worked for Bobby Flay at Mesa Grill. And so there's some of the and Mario Batali. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that coming out of her and then her own thing. It's just so good.
So that was a highlight. That's a highlight dish from the series for you.
And I even made it like a centerpiece of the film.
Really?
Yes, I did. Yeah. But I will say all of the chefs had really, I mean, like Elizabeth did an event, which I haven't been at an event in, I don't even know when the last event I was at, but she did a whole event with Hong Taimi. I think we actually ate there many years
ago. Oh yeah. Many years ago. We had at one of her place. It was at the Lower East Side, I think. Right.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was the event? It was an event that you
an event for Red, and Elizabeth's meal was delicious too, and of course Fatima's meal was incredible. It was one of the best Indian dishes I've ever had, or Pakistani dishes.
Now is this the picture we have up? But that's her holding her dish.
Yeah, and she also made something at her house with her mom that was really incredible too. I don't want to give too many spoilers away.
No, of course. So where do you get your ideas? Is it something you're driving around or you're you're sitting on the computer? Where do you get some of your ideas from to make films and documentaries?
Great question. I don't know, man. I did a great interview with this dude from The Record a while back, and I just think I focus on things that I really like, you know, and they just pop up, you know, like oh man, I would love to know more about. You know, why do minor leaguers, you know, this is like an idea I just recently had that I'll probably do nothing with. But what is it like of the families of a minor league baseball player that goes up and down to the minor leagues and major leagues? You know, he can't get his footing in. He gets the big shot, but then he doesn't, you know, he goes right back down a few days later. What is that like for the player? What is that like for the families? You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. And so like that idea I'll play with for a little bit, and then I'll bounce it off to this guy. My good friend these days is a guy named Ray Esposito. He's always been a good friend. And we produced a bunch of things together. We produced the COVID doc, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And then I'll just shoot him a text and be like, baseball players up and down minor leagues, major leagues. And then he'll write ? If he doesn't get it, or he'll be like, or, and then he'll like write some other subtle thing in there. But yeah. So like, that's, I don't know. It just kind of happens, man. You know, it's just like one of those things. I guess it's like writing a song or maybe creating a dish. It's just like, where does it come from? I don't know.
So yeah, again, you kind of draw maybe memories or, you know, family events or, you know, people in your family.
All of that. Yes. Yes.
Now I know that you also have acted in, and you also have produced and directed feature or more, I guess, fiction films.
Sure.
But, yeah. I want to get to that in a second, but I do want to talk about this COVID or post COVID documentary that you're working on. So kind of tell us a little bit about that. How did that come to be?
Well, I was Elizabeth Faulkner and I became friendly after the making of Her Name is Chef. And I was another topic that had came up a lot in the making of Her Name is Chef, or just in general, was or since after Bourdain, really, was the mental health of chefs and how tough that is. So right before COVID, maybe February, I had a lunch with Elizabeth Faulkner, and we started to like talk about film ideas, and I had approached her about making a mental health restaurant documentary as a follow-up to Her Name is Chef. Cause I just want to keep moving and I want to just keep making, you know, I don't want to stop. And she thought it was a great idea. And then COVID hit and we were already starting that conversation, and we were starting to talk to people about making that mental health movie. COVID hit. I moved to LA and Elizabeth moved to LA within 2 weeks of each other.
Really?
Yeah. And so that was interesting. And we became really close because of that. You know, we both had that shared experience. And we started talking about it. And it was just like, yeah, let's do this. And we talked to Ray Esposito, who I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think we should make this movie. And he got on board as an executive producer. And the challenge was shooting it in COVID. We shot this documentary in the thick of COVID. You know, I think we shot it mostly in June or late June, early July. I was back in the East Coast for it. Yeah. And we shot a lot out here in LA. We went to San Francisco. We did all the things you're not supposed to do during COVID. I flew from LA. We shot in LA. I flew to San Francisco, and then we shot in New York and New Jersey. And
because I think that might have been the last time that we actually saw each other in person was when you were out.
Yeah,
Leo,
right? Yeah. I mean, I've been back a couple times, but I don't think it's just been really quick in and outs. But yeah, I mean, it was a really odd experience. You know, to be out in that universe at that time, and it was a couple of months after the lockdown and all that. But it was still, and actually just maybe a couple of weeks or maybe a couple of days removed from the whole Black Lives Matter protests and whatnot. So that was all starting to, that was still fresh. And we, in the making of the movie, we saw protests in New York and LA, and we dealt with, you know, we talked to restaurant owners in San Francisco that had just dealt with that, and Nancy Silverton the day after her place, or that weekend of. So it was a lot was happening all at the time that we made it, and we're still editing it. We're still putting it together. It's really turning out really, really nice, and it's very interesting. There's no real ending because we don't know what's going to happen with restaurants. So it's been really interesting to think about that. But it's been a really awesome experience. It was a really awesome experience meeting it. I met so many awesome chefs through this, you know.
Now, I mean, talking about restaurants, and especially, I mean, here in New Jersey, we've been very lucky. We've been open at 25% capacity pretty much, you know, since I guess, Labor Day weekend. We've been open indoors. So now, can you dine indoors in LA?
No.
Or in California?
No. I think outdoor dining just reopened.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
There was a hot minute
where indoor dining was opened again. Yeah.
But it was a quick
in and out. We were in and out with that. Yeah. I will be honest though. And it's interesting because I'm somebody that will like be the first, you know, both of us be the first one back in the restaurant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, cause I want to get back to restaurants. I want to sit at the bar. I want to have a drink. I want to eat. I want to eat a steak. And yeah, we sat someplace around here and Pasadena, and I was like, I do not feel comfortable.
Really,
this restaurant. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Why? Just explain. Why? That's
interesting. There was just too many people in the restaurant.
They weren't following.
Following the guidelines, and I think that's why everything inevitably got shut down back out here again. They were trying to put people in seats, and they definitely didn't feel like it was 6 feet apart. But they, you know, they were trying to make money in this pandemic, and this is probably the only way that they thought to do it. I mean, somebody came in with a table of like 12. I was like, you know, you got to pass that. I know you don't want to, but you got to pass the 12 up because you can't seat them. And you got them all spread out through the whole restaurant. Two of them over here, six over here. You know what I mean? And I'm just, me and Christina are in the center. You know, and I was just like, I don't love this. And, you know, you have to take your mask off to eat. So it was a hassle. Now, I will say Leah and I went to Steve Sizzlin Steak back in Jersey. And I felt okay there inside.
But you couldn't sit at the bar.
They had people sitting at the bar.
Oh, really? Okay. I know.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Steve Sizzling Steaks and Outback and our favorite restaurants, I think we should talk a little bit about some of our.
Yet. Yeah.
I know. I wanted to kind of concentrate on what you're doing. You know, professionally. So, you know, we covered the podcast.
That's right.
We covered Her Name Is Chef. We talked a little bit about the new documentary. So now we're gonna kind of loosen our tie. You know, just kind of get a little comfortable here and just talk about, you know, just whatever kind of comes to our minds now. Again, I'm Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. Joining me tonight at the table is my good friend Pete Ferrero. He is joining us all the way from California. And so I'm going to preface this by saying Pete is a born and raised Jersey boy.
Right.
Born in Lyndhurst, right? You're originally from Lyndhurst.
Born in Lyndhurst, lived in high school, went to high school in Paramus, and then moved back to Lyndhurst because I just couldn't get enough of it.
Well, I mean, you think about it. I mean, really, Lyndhurst is a hub of a town. I mean, in pizza, Italian American.
That's right.
So Lyndhurst was, and it still is to a certain extent, a hub of Italian America. So it's still an Italian enclave. You have places like the Lyndhurst Pastry Shop. You have Angelo's. You have Michael's. Was Michael's Salumeria down on
so Valley? Good. Hey, you know what's funny about Michael's? That place that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. I was shooting in. Me and Elizabeth were shooting for the COVID doc, and Matthew Acarino is in the COVID doc, and he's a restaurant chef out in San Francisco at SPQR. And I was talking to him, and he's like, Elizabeth's like, Matt, you were from New Jersey too, weren't you? And he's like, yeah. And he didn't want to talk about it for whatever reason. And I was like, well, where in New Jersey? She's like, Peter wasn't from New Jersey too. She's like, I feel like you guys were from the same town. And he's like, doubtful. And I was like, well, I lived in Lyndhurst. And he's like, oh yeah, no, that's exactly where I lived. And he was like, and then he mentioned Michael's as well. Like, there's that great killer spot in Lyndhurst, Michael's. Yeah. I miss Michael's. God, send me a sandwich, please.
Actually, we have a Peter Goldworthy chiming in. He says, you're losing your Jersey accent, Pete. Tony's a lot stronger. Laugh out loud.
Thank you.
But really, I mean, you know, people always say, Jersey, it's Jersey. No, it's not New York. But really, think about it. There are so many amazing places that we are blessed to live by.
And we ate a lot of them, man. I mean, through the years of what year was that? 8, 9, 10?
Yeah, I guess like 8, 7 or 8. No, eight. It had to be 8 or 9.
So, I mean, from David Burke down the shore to all the pizza joints that we that we tried. I mean, I remember one time you just randomly messaged me or texted. Texting has been around a while, right? And you were like, want to go to this Jewish deli down in
– yes.
And we would just do just like out of the morning of. You want to go?
Actually, the name of the deli is a Jewish deli was Epis Essen. It's in Livingston.
So good, man. Yeah. Hey, I have to tell you, Jewish delis out here rock, dude. There's a few Jewish delis that I have gone to during the pandemic that I'm just like totally, totally obsessed with. There's this
welcome. What have we got?
Wexler's is in LA in a market. It's just fucking incredible. So I've been diving deep into the Jewish delis out here. I'm obsessed with them. Yeah, there's that.
But delis are it's that comfort food.
Yeah.
So you know, for Italian Americans, you know, it's meatballs and macaroni. You know, maybe for a Jewish deli, it's the knishes, it's the corned beef sandwiches, the Reubens. You know, so there are what'd you say, banh mi?
I said pastrami.
Yeah. Oh, he said banh mi. I said banh mi, yeah, for Vietnamese.
Pastrami, yeah.
No, but you're right. You're right, Peter. I mean, there are so many of these great, you know, little dishes or cuisines that, you know, kind of sometimes, you know, you want to try the next big thing. But sometimes, you know, go back to nostalgia. Go back to your roots.
It's interesting. During this pandemic, I have found myself, and I said, I think I told Elizabeth this. I was like, I find myself these days really not going too off the beaten path. I'm back to wanting Italian food shipped to me by my mom or Angelo's or what's that place in Lodi? Vietnamia?
Yeah. Vietnamia?
Yeah, Vietnamia is that. Like, my dad shipped me a whole bunch of raviolis and cheese and all that stuff from there over the holidays. I don't know if they do that all the time, but yeah.
But you're right in a way, because I think that the pandemic, you know, the lockdowns and the closures, they forced us to stay home. They forced us to kind of stay with our. I know they're using terms like cohorts and small groups, but they, you know, they forced us really to kind of, to kind of go back to the old way, you know, kind of, you know, cooking dinner with your family, you know, not always be on the phone, you know, kind of having conversations again. So in a weird way, as bad as the pandemic is, I think it helped some people to draw closer as a family.
I mean, it's interesting too in terms of like drinking and alcohol. We would go out when you were in Men Who Dine, and we would hang out and hanging around that, and we would out drink and hang out and party and all that stuff. And you know, in large groups, and we'd spend a lot of time out, and I'd drink and hang out in many bars and whatnot and restaurants in New Jersey. Shout out to Sharky's, which is my favorite bar in New Jersey.
Wings, that's a wing joint, right?
Wings and drinks, yeah. Well, the drinks aren't complicated. It's just Yingling, you know. But you know, it's interesting with being in the pandemic. That is that one aspect, that social aspect, like we talked about with bars, kind of going out, meeting you for a drink, or meeting or getting a drink after or before a meeting or a dinner. You know, we've done that a lot of times. I miss that a lot. So I thought I would drink less, but actually I drank more because I have it here. I can pour what I want. I don't have the really great long conversation that it took through the bottle of wine that we drank or the multiple beers that we had. You know what I mean? So there isn't that's happening so much anymore, but it is an interesting, it's a very interesting thing, because I think I'm drinking more. Or I drank more. I'm not as much now, but then, yeah.
But you think about it, it's even cheaper to drink home.
Well, that's the other thing too, right? Like, so now if we went to some bar and we had a bottle, that might have ran us $70, where the bottle was 20, and I just drank two bottles. It's okay for me to drink three in one sitting because it's cost effective.
I have to ask you a crazy question. So now, sure. I know obviously that you're a producer, a filmmaker, a director. Do you find yourself when you're watching TV nowadays and you watch a show from like say 5, 6, even 2 years ago, you say, why are there so many people in this one scene? Why are they wearing masks?
It is like that. I had never seen the show The Office. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
Yeah, I've seen Jibs and Drabs.
So I did a binge of The Office, and there would be party scenes, and I would be like, what the fuck? These people are outrageous the way they're hanging out. And then I was like, oh, wait. No. This show was shot before the pandemic. Even watching Three's Company with everybody hanging out at the Regal Beagle. You're like, you can't hang out like this, guys. You know? Jack and Christy need to go back to the apartment and stay 6 feet apart.
But really, but it's crazy how it kind of, it's crazy how it kind of plays with your mind.
It is playing with my mind, and I am. And you know, I had a really interesting conversation with somebody once at dinner recently, maybe in the last 6 months, and we were just talking about getting prepped for. After the pandemic, we were having that conversation that we've all been having, like, what does that look like? What does after the pandemic look like? Do you feel comfortable going to a restaurant? Do you feel like you're always going to have to wear a mask? And he said to me, I don't really feel comfortable. Like, I don't even feel comfortable leaving my house now. Like, not even about the pandemic, just genuinely or generally being here. I do my podcast from here. I've been editing the films from here. I've been producing from here. You know what I mean? So everything has been done literally on this laptop for the last 8 months. Even the event work, you know what I mean? Like, I've flown out for a few events, but for the most part, I've hired shooters and gotten teams together to help me with that. And a lot of it is the Zoom conversation, talking to them about that. So a lot of it's all, I feel like the Wizard of Oz in a weird way, you know, where it's all happening behind the scenes in one location. So I just think there's going to be it's going to take me a little bit of time to like get the energy to like just go out and do something. Even if they were like, okay, everybody's vaccinated, go party. I don't know that I'm going to be the first one outside of my house just because I really love the comfort of home. You know?
Yes. And that's a good point. And even to be honest with you, I mean, I think that, you know, masks work because personally, I'll be honest with you. I used to get colds like all the time, especially in the wintertime. Not, I mean, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be sick as a dog with a cold.
But
with the snow. But you know, I really haven't had these constant chronic colds that I used to get during the winter. And I kind of guess I have to, you know, thank in a way the mask wearing that maybe it is working.
And I also agree that, like, listen, you know, back in the day, we would go out and we would eat, we would drink, we would hang out, be around a lot of people. And I'm surprised that something like this hasn't happened sooner.
That's a good point.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead. All right.
The snow. Now, I'm...
Oh, no, please.
Wait, let me just explain my life here. The last few weeks here in Altadena, we've had 40-degree weather and rain. I have worn a hat, a winter whatever you call it, a beanie.
Yeah.
Worn my Claire Arnold hoodie and sweatpants. I am totally like, this is fucking freezing. I don't know. Can I curse on your show? I just did.
No, probably not, but you did.
it's outrageous how cold it is here, right? And I'm saying this to people back in New Jersey, like, oh my God, this is outrageous. It's 40. And then I was telling somebody and they said, it's 10. I just want to let you know that is 40 is cold for California, but it is 10 here.
It's 10. We have 3 feet of snow.
Now tell me about that. Only because I'm not there, so I can just enjoy how that all played out. Because I do miss snow day.
Peter, it was crazy. It was like, okay, we're gonna get a storm. We're gonna get like you know 12 inches, which is isn't terrible. It's a foot. We can deal with it. And then it started snowing on Sunday, and it didn't stop until like today. What's today? Tuesday.
It's been snowing ever since. A text. It's still snowing.
Yeah, it was. It was snowing. I went out and snowblowed, shoveled. We were out three times the last two or three days. But really, it's something that I guess a Jersey. Somebody mentioned that I have a thick Jersey accent. Jersey's in the blood. It's kind of as much as you hate the snow.
You love it. I mean, I do miss it. I saw that snowfall, and I remember being in Jersey, for a long time. I'm only gone 8 months, whatever.
Yeah.
I remember a long time, every winter storm, waiting for that moment. They would always be like, I remember Chris Christie was out like, this one's going to be outrageous. You know what I mean? And then he'd wake up the next morning like, holy shit, I'm going to be in for the week. And then look outside, and there'd be like a dust. Like, he literally shut down the state once. You know what I mean? For some winter storm advisory, do not leave your home. New York was saying the same thing. I think it was him. And then you looked and you're like, what happened? Where did they get it wrong? What kind
of? I guess you really can't knock the meteorologist because, it's a game of chance. Really, right. You think about it.
Yeah.
Because it's just the way. If the millibars, and if it doesn't hit exactly,
whatever.
Yeah. if it doesn't make this the perfect combination, then it'll be a bust. But we didn't get a bust.
Do you have a desire to be a weatherman? Is that why you just defended all weathermen and women?
No, I don't. But I have friends that are weather people, so I don't want to. I don't want to.
I'm sorry. You get it wrong sometimes. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't want to offend anybody. This is an equal opportunity, non-offending show.
No, I love weathermen just as much as weather women in any other industry.
Weather people. Yes. We can't say weatherman or weatherwoman, I don't think, anymore, but weather people, we could say. We
can still say that. I love them all. And I love dentists and plumbers and every field. I'm good with all of it. Yeah.
I love everybody. There's not many people I don't like, to be honest.
Not me either. I mean, there's a handful, but
life's too short to not like people, right?
For sure.
Again, I'm Anthony Sciogliabera, known as Tony Mongia. I'm being joined tonight by my good friend Pete Ferrero. He is a podcaster. He is a filmmaker. He is a director. He is a producer. He is also an actor, and we didn't even get into that yet.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about his acting career. And
I have nowhere to go, man. I'm hanging out with you. I'm with you here. This is exciting. I am. I'm stoked to be on this finally.
It's a pleasure for you to be here, my friend. But recently, you released. I guess it was late last year. You released. You didn't release anything unless you're releasing your boots. You released a short film that you made that you directed. And you starred in.
That's right.
So kind of tell us about. And I was actually an extra in it. I'll kind of
throw that out there. You were fantastic. We all talked.
Do I get an IMDb page for that or something? Do I get like
probably? I'm sure there's a handful of the extras that did do that. Yeah. Like thinking of one in particular.
Oh no. Yeah. We'll leave it there. So kind of tell. And obviously, you can watch it on Amazon Prime. So tell us about the short.
You know, I guess it is interesting about that short because I guess in doing Her Name is Chef and dealing with all those issues, that was still lingering in my creative brain that like, I have to do more with this. I have to do more with this topic about bad behavior. And without naming people, I had gone to an event similarly to the one that's in The Boys Will Be. And everyone acted really badly. We've all been in events like that. And, you know, the guys are just being the guys, and there's sort of this excuse of just, oh, they're boys will be. This is who the boys are. And I was like, I really would like to write something like this. And so, and based on my experience that I had had, and I wasn't perfect. So there, I'm not the hero of the story that came in and saved the day by any means. But I was an active participant, and I've learned a lot in the making of this documentary, and I want to talk more about it. I don't know. It kind of happened around the same time. I wrote it around the same time and sent it to multiple people and got some thoughts on the script and all that stuff. And then I was like, okay, I like it. And, you know, Dominic Civilian, whose work is so wonderful, and I haven't even mentioned yet, and I'm sure he's probably tuned out by now if he was watching. But I told him, I was like, we had just been shooting a bunch together. We had done Her Name is Chef together. And we had done, I feel like we just did something else together. I don't remember what it was. And I was like, hey, man, I got a short too that I really want to do. And he was working for a while. And then I sent it to him. And he's like, all right, cool. Let's do it. So we got a crew together. And then like me, you know, like when I get an idea to do something and I'm like, I just want to go and do it. I don't want to talk about that. What about that, you know, boys will be idea. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to just keep talking about it. I hate when I hear people talking about the film, you know, like, and then you see them 2 years later and they're like, still thinking about writing that movie. And you're like, well, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, I already did that, you know? So anyway, we just got together. We started doing it, started talking about it, started making it. And then we shot it over a few days, learned a lot, was really great. It was really tough to act and be direct and all of it at the same time. I've learned that. That was a very tough experience for me. But I thought we got some really great stuff and some really tender, nice moments out of it. The actresses were all really good, and I think that always helps. The cast was good. And it was a lot of fun. And then finally it was done, and I was like, now at least I can just, like, because with so much of this other stuff, it's like, well, you're trying to hope that, you know, somebody picks it up or looks at it, and you're going through all those private channels and all those conversations. So I was like, this is just something I can just release. You know, I don't need to wait for anybody. I'm just going to release it on Amazon. We're going to see how it does. And hopefully, and it did okay. You know, a lot of my 90210 peeps came out and watched it. And that was very sweet of all of them. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's still out there on Amazon Direct somewhere. Yeah.
One of my favorite, besides my scenes. Okay. One of my favorite scenes is you're in a bowling alley. And you're wearing one of my favorite t-shirts.
That's right. My Mike's sandwich shop. Yeah.
So we got to talk a little bit about Mike. I know in the beginning of the pandemic, you were doing a lot of the podcasts
live at night,
separate from, you know, 90210, sure. You know, kind of, so it was kind of like a, so you had the pop-up podcast, you were doing the live at night podcast, and Mike Carino, one of the most genuine, one of the nicest, one of the best chefs I ever met. He was on your show a lot.
He was on pretty much every week.
and one of the topics that we covered a lot, I think, which kind of, I guess, segues in a way to what we talked about earlier about the post COVID and about, you know, mental health and mental, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
I know, so Mike talked a lot about that on your show.
He had, and I actually don't know the timing of all of this. Like I struggle.
I know it's like one, because
like randomly since we're in 2021, random events in 2020 pop into my brain. I'm like, oh, that happened too. Like the other day, randomly, it was like, oh shit, Regis Philbin died.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that was something else that happened last year. I mean, it came to the point where I was like, my grandmother died last year. Like, no, that's a very sad thing. You know what I mean? But like, I have no connection to some of these things that happened, because that happened and then this happened. You know what I mean? Like something else crazy happened. But so it's been tough to remember days and thoughts. But yes, Mike, we were doing live at night, and I think we talked about that a little earlier. Like I was going live every night doing a show because I wanted to present something for people that needed a space out of their head, because when I was trying to live in the space of 2020, it was very difficult. And I thought, well, if I could go live with my friends for a couple hours every night, we can at least get people out of this headspace of what am I going to do tomorrow? And Mike was on and you were on. We were doing those Monday Night Manjas, which was so much fun to do and talk about various foods and whatnot. And because of that, Mike is in the COVID documentary and is probably one of the most compelling stories in the whole project. There he is. Yeah, there it is, shooting it. And he's just such a sweetheart of a person. And I do think we need to bring back a Monday Night Manja. So
definitely. Yeah. But really, so talk a little bit about some of your, we really didn't cover about your favorite places in Jersey. What are some of your favorite places in Jersey that, you know, kind of, so when you're next time you come back east, you know, what's the first place you're going to visit besides your mom and dad? What's the first place you're going to visit?
It's interesting too, because like, I think about that a lot. Like, you know, because I've been, you know, so out of the loop or whatever. Sharky's is my first go-to. And I think that's because one, they've handled the pandemic really great. You know what I mean? Like the outdoor dining is really awesome. And I love the wings and beer there, and I'll try to meet a bud. That is always like critical, because mm-hmm. I miss those wings a lot. And then Leah, I always find the time to hang out with her when I'm in town. She's really one of my really turned into be from the doing the documentary and then just hanging out where she's really one of my really good friends. And you could say besties, if she's watching. But yeah, no, so we'll find somewhere to go. Either it's her restaurant, and then she'll be like, well, where do you want to go? And then that's a really tough question. You know, Angelo's is always at the top of the list. Belmont Tavern, if you're around, always at the top of the list. But Mike's Sandwich Shop is always at the top of the list. And then I just like A1 Pizza in Lyndhurst. You know, I just like the Taylor Ham Egg and Cheese Sandwich from Bob's. I just like the places that we would never talk about. You know, so I miss because some of those
places have – it might not be a famous place or a place that everybody knows, but it has importance to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just where I went used when I lived in Lyndhurst for so many years, or I lived in Jersey for so many years. Like going to Bob's for my Taylor Ham Egg and Cheese was that's my thing. You know, I mean, that's where I went. I mean, I went to that place probably more than any other spot in Jersey, because I would go there at least 3 times a week for my bagel or my Taylor Ham Egg and Cheese. So that's one that I always go to and I miss a lot.
Do they have Taylor Ham in California?
Oh, yeah. No.
No. Do they have pork roll?
Nope. So I have to get that
out of here.
I get that shipped here. Yeah, $80.
They don't have Taylor Ham or pork roll.
No, that's a ship. You got to get that ship.
Do they know what it is?
Nope.
You could be that guy that brings Taylor Ham and introduces Taylor Ham to California.
Well, I'm such a Taylor Swift fan, so that would be appropriate that I brought Taylor Ham. I brought some portion of Taylor.
Of course, you figure there's got to be some transplants.
There's a lot of us, and there's a lot of message forums and
no,
mm-hmm.
like support groups. Support. Like I need.
Where do I find Taylor Ham? There's not. I don't really. And if somebody is out here in LA and knows where to find it, just tell me, because I'll be there tomorrow. Yeah. Because
you figure there has to. I mean, again, it's like, you know, you think about like Florida, a lot of transplants from New York, New Jersey. You know, so, you know, you got. I'm sure there's Taylor Ham in Florida. I don't know. I don't know if there is. There might not be, but you think they'll place that.
I think that there is. God, I that was my theory too. There has got to be a place that has thought to themselves, we need Taylor Ham in this city. We need Taylor Ham in Los Angeles or LA or in San Diego, anywhere.
You could be that guy, though. You could be that guy to bring Taylor Ham to LA.
I'm good. I got a lot going on. I'm fine going to the website and going to taylorham.com or whatever, wherever I got it that time. Yeah. I mean, and so it's been tough, man, because, you know, the pandemic has not, I mean, for a minute there, I was flying back to Jersey every couple of months and I was getting my fills of my Taylor Ham Egg and Cheese or the places that we just mentioned. Steve Sizzling is on that list. That might upset some people that hate Steve's. I love Steve's, man. I miss a Steve Sizzling steak. It's funny. I had a steak out here, and I love all the steakhouses out here. That's not a diss, but like, I just miss that, like, that sauce and like that black and blue steak. Like, if I said to anyone outside of Jersey, I like a black and blue steak, I don't know if they would know what that means. You know what I mean? So
that's a good question. I don't know. We have to do some research on that.
Yeah. It's been tough, man. Some of the creature comfort foods have been really tough. Like, I just saw Goldbelly has Have you? Oh, we went to Atlantic City and we ate at the White House Subs, right?
I think we were down there. I don't remember.
Well,
we went.
Tony Bologna's place. Yeah,
Tony Bologna's.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the White House Subs is there too, which is obviously a old time favorite of mine. So they're finally on Gold Belly, and I was like, well, this might be my only way to get deli sandwiches shipped to me.
So wait, there's no deli sandwiches either?
There are deli sandwiches. Don't get me wrong, but there is
They're not Jersey deli sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, what are some of your favorite places out west? What are you eating out there?
Nancy Silverton's got. Well, it's a very interesting thing too, because it's like I haven't. You know what I mean? Like I haven't really.
Yeah, because you kind of moved in the middle of a pandemic.
I haven't. I mean, I ate at. I love the Apple Pan, which is the basis of the Peach Pit in L.A.
Oh, really? There's an actual place?
Well, the Peach Pit's not, but the place that it was based off of is called the Apple Pan. So, and the burgers there are great. In-N-Out's great. I've had a lot of that. You know, I've eaten at Nancy Silverton's. When we were making the doc, I ate a lot of really great spots out here. And it's just, you know, but I haven't really gotten to dive in. Do you want to explain that? I saw that question pop up.
You can explain it. Go ahead. Explain what a black and blue is.
Like, you know, the crust is like totally cooked, but the inside is totally rare. It's like they, I don't even know what the process of a black and blue steak is, but you think from the exterior of it that it's been well done. Yeah, or not well done, but it's been really cooked because of the crust, the way they crust it, the outside. But the inside is pretty, pretty rare.
Yeah. I mean, but really, that's the only way to eat a steak.
Black and blue is the only, and just to be clear, like it's not just an out of state thing. Like even inside the state of Jersey, I would order a black and blue steak at places, and they would have no idea what that concept was. So,
what about pizza? What about pizza in California?
I mean, it's obsolete. there's nothing. No, Nancy Silverton's got them. Her place is great. There is a Prince Pizza out here now that's like New York style.
Oh, okay.
The thing about it is what I've learned about pizza is that there is the New Jersey, New York style pizza. I think of it, believe it or not, I prefer the Jersey pizzas over the New York style pizzas. I love my Queste and I love my New York style pizzas. Don't get me wrong. I go to those places all the time, but like the Jersey pizzas for me are, you know, that's your home base. That's the home base.
Well, now there was one particular pizzeria that I know that originally started in your town, your hometown. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of like the it was a whole story about that, that the guy left, then he went someplace else.
Huh? Steve's. Isn't it Steve's? Is it another Steve's? Bruno's. Mr. Bruno's, but his name is Steve. I'm sorry. Mr. Bruno's, but his name is Steve. Yeah. Never responded to my request to be interviewed on Monday Night Mancha. Okay. Mr. Bruno's was a classic Lyndhurst pizza. Probably the best Lyndhurst pizza. And I used to go there all the time. And then Mr. Bruno sold the place to another person, and wow, did that shit just go south. That was the end of that. And I remember he opened another Mr. Bruno's. He got them started in like a mall, in a strip mall. And he was there the one day, and it was great. It was like Mr. Bruno's is back again. And then and then he left there and it went downhill. But when he was there that day, I was like, wow, that Lyndhurst, they really what happened?
But is the Mr. Bruno style the upside down Sicilian?
No.
Is that the style that you – because there is a Bruno's in Clifton, and they make an amazing upside down
pizza. I don't eat that. I just eat brown pie.
Round pie. So it's not the upside down pie.
I don't need any of it. I just need a round pie. I'm not a big Sicilian pizza fan. Sorry. I know that's a really upsetting thing.
Oh, that's upsetting to me, because the best Sicilian pizza you'll ever eat is Lodi pizza.
Okay. I mean, I guarantee
you will never have a Sicilian pie like that ever.
I just don't like thick. I just don't like thick pizza.
But that's the thing. It's not because most when people think of Sicilians, they think of like this big doughy.
Yeah, and I'm also really not a big fan of Chicago style pizza either. You know,
that's not what Lodi does. Lodi is a thinner pie, but it's in a square. Okay. So that you have to
in the square back- format. In the square format. Now, out here, there's a great spot called Triple Bean Pizza, which is a Roman style pizza, which
That's good.
Which is square, like is like a square, like a square pie. That's also a Nancy Silverton. I don't know if she owns it or influenced it. I don't know. But like we go there all the time, and that's got my closest feelings of home is the Roman style pizza.
What's it called? What's the name of the place?
Triple Beam Pizza. It's out in Pasadena. There's like one that's around. It's not in Pasadena, but it's like 20 minutes from here. It's pretty easy to get to, and it's on DoorDash. I don't leave my house. They deliver here. So
Triple Beam.
Yes, Triple Beam Pizza.
Yeah. I never heard of Triple Beam.
Well, it's not nationwide.
I mean, I have heard of In and Out. That's not nationwide.
Well, you know Nancy Silverton's pizza. Moza is incredible. You know, obviously I've eaten there multiple times, but I haven't really been able to like really go to LA and enjoy that experience because it's not there yet. You know, when the outdoor dining was going on, I still didn't feel like restaurants were back. You know, I really just miss that experience of like, you know, I wish that coming, I mean, there's a lot of things I wish had happened when I moved out here, but I'm also really happy with how it played out in a way. Not that I'm happy with the pandemic.
No.
But I don't know that the podcast would have started. It's a very weird place to be in because I don't know if the podcast would have started without the pandemic. And I really have enjoyed this. So it's, I needed a break to pivot into something else. So
there's one thing that I remember we talked about a lot when, you know, when we used to hang out a lot, when you were back home, and there was one piece of advice you would always say to me, you'd always say, let the day take you.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, and the day doesn't have to be the day, but just let the
thing about it is there's a theory that people want to seize the day, which is fine. I get it. But I actually think you need to surf the day. You need to let the day take you because the day, like if you allow people to contact you, because there's a lot of people all trying to seize it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So if you surf it and seize in moments, you know, when the opportunity, like for example, doing the 90210 podcast or you doing this podcast, that's seizing a day, that's seizing a moment. But if you can surf and let other people sort of bring to you ideas or bring to you what, you know, like we used to go eat, you know, so some mornings I would wake up and have no idea what I was going to do. And you would text me and say, let's go to this Jewish deli. And I would be like all in. So I'm all about, let the day take you or surfing the day, I guess is now what I would say.
but it works to a certain extent.
Well, because somebody wants to do something. If you've done enough, that people are going to contact you about something. So you have to decide like what part of that do you want to be in? Like you can say no. That doesn't mean to always go with what it is. But like I just feel like if you just allow these things to come up. Yeah, okay. That sounds great. Fuck. And you know what I mean? I want to do that. Yeah, I want to go there. I'll go to the Apple Pan today. That sounds like a great idea. I'm all in. Let's do it. You know what I mean?
Now, before we conclude today's show, again, sure. Being joined by Pete Ferrero, a good friend of mine at the table with Tony. My name is Anthony Shilley, better known as Tony Manja. I want to touch just briefly, because we haven't really even got into this. It's a whole Pandora's box. Once you open it, it's going to be hard to put everything back inside. But we didn't really talk anything. And I know that you're a huge music fan.
That's right.
Huge music fan. And in particular, I know you mentioned Taylor Swift, but I know that you have also a strong connection with the Rolling Stones.
That's right. Yeah. The Rolling Stones is actually what started the 90210 podcast too, which is
okay. Well, how
was... Well, because there was a Rolling Stones episode of Beverly Hills 90210, and that was the episode that I asked Charles Rosen to talk to me about, and inevitably
really?
He said yes to because he loves the Rolling Stones that much as I do. So, that was the way that this whole thing started, was through that episode.
Wow.
And so that's really, and we've covered it now on our podcast as well. And I feel like I want to cover it again. Like we should have to do that one again. Like, we've done that twice now. So it's.
So what is your connection with the Rolling Stones? Why do you love them? Why are they an important part of your life?
It's my connection to my dad, you know, growing up and that was our thing. We listened to the Stones all the time. We didn't listen to it together. It wasn't like we sat in a room, you know, he played it. I listened to it. I loved it. And then I loved it on my own, which is really important. And, yeah, I mean, I just fell in love with that music. You know, I just grew up on all of that.
But you know, that is important that you said that. You know, it's kind of a connection to your dad, because then you know you have a way of living that what would you say, living that I don't know what the word I'm looking for here, but like
I can't help you because I don't know what word you're gonna say.
You know, like, you know, kind of continuing a tradition in the family. Sure.
Yeah, the legacy of that. Yeah,
legacy is the word.
Definitely,
it's even like I think about my own father, and you know, he was a huge Sinatra fan, a huge, you know, the oldies, the doo-wop. So you know, and for me, you know, I'm 38 years old, but not many 38-year-old people are listening to, you know, Frank Sinatra or doo-wop
music. I don't even know if they're listening to the Stones, really.
That's a good point. Other than what you would hear in a commercial, and even now, I think I heard like. I heard one of the Stones recently in a commercial. It wasn't the Stones. It was like a totally different group singing it. I mean, it was good, but that's kind of interesting that how, not to say to repurpose the music, but to, you know, maybe somebody might say, oh, I like that song. Is that
an original? Rainbow, maybe. I think She's a Rainbow is getting a lot of play these days on a commercial. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting how people find the Stones or confuse other bands with the Stones, which is always so fascinating to me when someone's like, I love that song by the Stones, and it's some Creedence Clearwater Revival song. You don't like that song by the Stones, but I got it. I mean, it's just something that has been such a huge part of my whole life, growing up from when I was a kid and singing Mick Jagger tunes and behaving like him and all that stuff. And to now, you know, I still listen to the Stones. I mean, I pulled the guitar up before and played Tumbling Dice before we came on because I was needed like something to do in the 5 or 10 minutes before we came on. And I was like, I'll play that. That's fine. You know?
Yeah. So you still, you know, as you're still connected to the music.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, and like, you know, my dad has become, you know, somewhat connected to them and, through other reasons and people that he knows. And so, yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more connected to the music now, especially in a pandemic when you have only records or vinyl to listen to or new music from Taylor Swift or whatever. I mean, my whole pandemic was listening to Taylor Swift, and it really spoke to me in a way that was very deeply connected. And then also listening to, because she's just singing about a lot of the stuff that we're all going through. She's not saying like, I put my mask on today. You know what I mean? It's not that, but it's about what emotions we're all feeling in this time. Because for the most part of my pandemic experience, yes, I have had these really amazing moments of having the cast on the show, or meeting Claire or Kathleen or Claire or whatever, or all these really cool things. But there's been a lot of moments of, you know, and I don't mean to go so deep and dark, but there's been a lot of moments of emptiness and uncertainty. I think there's a lot of moments of uncertainty in this pandemic of, will my movie come out? Will I get to shoot another one? Will the cast come on the show, you know, or will, you know, like various stages of things that you're trying to get to happen inside a global pandemic that maybe normally would be a no or a yes, depending on what it is, you know? And so getting music has been so crucial to this whole process. And, you know, we talked about the Stones and Taylor Swift, but Bruce Springsteen, of course, is just another person that we both have a commonality with. Yeah. I mean, just, you took me to my first Bruce Springsteen show. And after that, like, I just was all in on Bruce. And even more so now, you know, one of the songs that, of Bruce's, believe it or not, that Christina told me that you need to listen to, she said to me, and it's going to be the most obscene song. You're going to be like, I can't even imagine of all the Bruce songs, that's the one. She said, you need to listen to Dancing in the Dark. And I was like,
oh, I love that song.
But it's always been to me some pop 80s song. Yeah,
kitschy, campy song.
If you listen to Dancing in the Dark and you really listen to, I feel like he redid it. But I don't know. But if you really listen to Dancing in the Dark, it's about so much. And it became my mantra over the last couple of years prior to the pandemic, like going for it. Coming to LA is Dancing in the Dark. You know what I mean? So music is so important to me, man. I mean, I do a music show, which you don't like, where
I like it.
Where we talk about moments and stories like this, and that's been a lot of fun to like talk about that, and to talk specifically about like a song like "Dancing in the Dark" or a Taylor Swift song. Have you been listening to music in the pandemic at all?
A lot of Italian music.
Okay, so you're going roots. You're going back to roots.
Oh, big time. But everything really, again, like you said, I think this whole pandemic for me has been going back to what I know, going back to my roots, and even just what I've been making in the kitchen. You know, I'm not really experimenting too much with like crazy, you know, different cuisines. I kind of stay with the Italians, with the exception of the other day I made Montreal style bagels.
Oh, I saw that.
Amazing.
I saw that. Well, I did order from Gold Belly, H&H Bagels. That was really great. Gold Belly has been, by the way, no plug. I tried to get them to plug the 90210 show. They don't respond to me. But, man, I order so much from Gold Belly. The Philly cheesesteaks from Pat's. I mean, okay. So here's the other thing. We're talking food, right? I love Pat's Philly cheesesteaks. And some asshole will always write me after I post.
Gino's.
No, not Gino's. No one ever goes down that road. Nobody's dumb enough to say that. But they'll always hit me with, okay, but Jim's. I don't give a shit about Jim's. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Offend all of your food followers. I don't care. I love Pat's cheesesteaks. I'll tell you this story. I don't know if I've ever shared. I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I went to a Rolling Stones. We're in town in Philadelphia. This is a true story. I don't know if I've shared it.
I think I've heard the story.
Okay, but I will share it again for the people that have never heard it. And we were really about my dad is friends with Keith Richards' assistant. So I was in town, and a person that I shot for brought me to the town to eat dinner because they wanted to celebrate their event that they had. And I came to town, and I was like, okay, I'm all in for this. You know, this, I think we went to, what's the dude from Top Chef that's down in Philly that Spragas, right? And, anyway, you know, I got a text from the dude and he was like, let's do the Philly cheesesteak throwdown now. And I was like, now, you know what I mean? Like right now, after I just completed this dinner. And I was like, all right, well, yeah, let's do it. So we did Tony Luke's, we did Pat's. We did Gino's all in the same night after a long dinner at Spragas. And to me, Pat's wins. Tony Luke's is very close, though.
I'm a Pat's. But, you know, but you see, again, I think the reason why I'm a Pat's fan is because it was in Rocky.
Yeah.
To me, it has that connection. I'm a huge Rocky fan.
Yeah.
I think it has that.
It's also the best one. Like it's the, like, and I love Tony Luke's is very close. And DeNix is his own thing. You know, it's not that. But like to me, Pat, like especially on that block, if you want to just go the block, Pat's down better than Gino's.
Yeah, I do love myself a Pat's, but I also like John's, and Gold Belly excels in that.
Pat's, I think it has Gino's. I think it has Jim's. I saw Jim's on there. You know, I was like, I'm not going to invest $100 in a Jim's delivery because I've never had it. I'm not going off the beaten path.
No, you don't want to chance it.
No, Pat's, that's it. Yeah.
But John's roast pork is also really good. Have you ever had John's roast pork?
I have not had John's roast pork. Do you like the Knicks roast pork?
I do like the Knicks. But you see, the Knicks does broccoli rabe.
Love that. Yeah. You don't
John's,
love
No, I love it. But John's is different. They do spinach.
Oh, see, I would be into that too. Yeah, I would
so
be.
They're both great. It's just one is spinach and one's broccoli. And
Chicago's
rubs.
Got Mr. Beef, which is also a very similar concept. Mr. Beef
That's the roast, the Italian roast beef, right? The Italian beef.
So and I love me a Mr. Beef's. You know what I mean?
Is that on Gold Belly?
I think Mr. Beef's is on Gold Belly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. if not, I think Al's is on for sure, which is not as good. But I ate when we drove out here. I drove cross country in a pandemic as well, and Al's just happened to be off. You can get to it off the highway, so I had an Al's. I mean, you have to know, like when you know, like I am a foodie to the extreme. Like I hate that phrase. Foodies kind of got overplayed a little bit over in the last. Yeah. You know, and Food Network, thank you for making that really a thing. But I, you know, like even in the pandemic, like the initial thought when we were moving cross country before the pandemic was all the spots we were going to stop for food. Mm. You know, I was going to New Mexico. I was going to, you know, these were all the spots. We were going to stop in St. Louis for this. I was going to stop in Chicago for this. It was going to be this incredible experience of flavors through the entire country. I mean, because, you know, prior to it, when I've driven cross country, I never really got to do that. Like, we would stop and eat, but this was specifically with this plan in mind. And then it didn't happen, but I still made my way to Al's for Italian roast beef. Yeah. And I was the only one. I was me and one other guy. We both had masks and gloves on. The people behind the counter at Al's had masks and gloves on. And I got a hot dog too, like a Chicago style hot dog too. But I was like, this is so much work for this sandwich, you know?
But was it worth it?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Then that's all that matters. If you know, if you
got to take the mask off, you know, I got to take the whole, you know what I mean? The whole thing, the gloves have got to come off. You can't just like eat into the hot dog. No.
You have to be. It's the whole rigmarole of actually being able to eat.
That's right.
Yes. But I guess that's what makes it half the fun.
Well, it's more fun if I do that rigmarole in person. You know what I mean? Like in the restaurant, boom, just dive right in. But like in the car, the mask, the thing, you know, and then nobody wants to even hold the door for each other anymore. And, you know, maybe the door can somehow give me COVID, you know.
So, Peter, what else is on the horizon for you?
Well, people ask me what would my next documentary be, and if I would ever do a 90210 documentary. And for a long time, I said no, you know, because the podcast has felt like a 90210 documentary to me. But when you asked me about ideas before, I have a 90210 documentary idea that I'm floating with. So that could potentially be something that happens in the future. I have to talk to people. I sound like, never mind. But it has been floating in my brain. A 90210 documentary has been floating in my brain a little bit. I've got this other project that Ray and I made called The Brands, which is about all these really iconic brands. And I'm considering podcasting that or doing something with Ray with that. I have another podcast idea in mind. So there's a lot of like wheels turning in that realm, you know, in addition to all the stuff that I am doing. Mm-hmm. I am currently editing or going through the coloring process and the final sound steps for Her Name Is Chef. And a legal process of like securing clips and footage and all this stuff and making sure it is what it is. So once that's over, and that should be over by the end of this week, I'll be in a much better headspace to like tackle new ideas. But I have a lot of things flowing. And I wrote a film during the pandemic based on some of my wedding experiences and whatnot. So I with my friend Tim Jones, we wrote that together. And so I've been doing some of that, but I haven't been able to like refocus my energy because like now, since it was funny, like at the end of 2020, I was like going to take a few days off and like really slow down at the top of January because I just need a little breathing room. And then like maybe like 5 days after, I was like all into Her Name Is Chef and getting that completed. And then like, you know, we just did a big, you love this, we did a big Planet 90210 show where we had like Italian fans, or fans from Italy, fans from Australia. That's some of the people that are writing. Like Connor is from Ireland, and wow. Some of the people are like live in Italy. I mean, all these beautiful women were on the show last week. You know, I was talking to my people in Italy, and we were talking about 90210, and they were all on and England and all this stuff. So like we did that big super show. That was our third of our big super shows. So it's been a lot of fun doing all that and talking to those people. I just been since 21 started, I have not had a breather. I have not. I did fit in the Office rewatch, but I just have not had a breather at all.
So what is the best way that people to contact you, Peter? How, is it, you know, Instagram? Is it so, you know?
Yeah. I mean, hit me up at Peter Ferrero on Instagram. I'm trying to focus on that social media platform the most these days. Facebook got really ugly for a hot minute there, and it's been tough. But I'm, you know, obviously our shows on Facebook, our shows on YouTube, our shows in all those places. But for me personally, yeah, just hit me up on Instagram, and I will answer you for the most part.
And what about for the Beverly Hills show? If
you're rude about Claire, then I'm just going to block and mute you and pretend you don't exist.
And for your Beverly Hills show, people should go to Beverly Hills 90210show.com, correct?
Right, yes.
And for your filmmaking, Sunspot Films.
Sunspotfilms.com. I never update it, man. To find out what's up, just follow me on Instagram. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. I just get into arguments on Twitter, so don't follow me on Twitter.
So Instagram, follow Peter on Instagram.
Try not to argue too much on Instagram.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out tonight. This has been a blast. It was great to actually see you and, you know, see your face and be able to talk to you.
I mean, this has been more hanging out than it has been talking about things. We did talk about a lot of things, but yeah, man.
We covered a lot of bases, I think.
Yeah, and maybe I'll bring back a Monday Night Manja soon so we can all dive into that.
All right. That sounds like a plan to me. So I want to thank Peter for taking some time out tonight to join us at the table. Again, I am Anthony Scilia, better known as Tony Manja. We'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors, Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, The Italian Enclaves Historical Society,